The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
For more on the Middle East, which we have been covering throughout the day on the show, I am joined now by Dr. Siavush Ranjbar Dhami, Senior Lecturer in Modern Middle Eastern History at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. Good evening to you, Siavush. The situation currently, as it is unfolding, I've seen lots on social media of Iranians, many in the diaspora, who are supportive of this move by Israel and the United States. Do you believe that the majority of people within Iran are supportive of what's happening?
Good afternoon. No, I don't think so. And we don't have any proof of that. There has been elation and celebration when the death of Khamenei was announced. People in the streets celebrated. But the people who did it also, a lot of them were relatives of those who had been killed in the January repression of political protests, which, of course, happened under the watch of Khamenei. That being said, that I don't think translates automatically to support for the ongoing attacks. And we are increasingly receiving reports of the effects of these attacks on civilians. We've heard that very tragic story about the school children of that school in southern Iran being hit directly, at least due to aftershocks. Hospitals are being hit. News has come in of one of the most important historical royal palaces of Tehran being severely damaged, again, by the shrapnel, by the debris of these Israeli attacks. So this will probably have an effect, especially as this, if this conflict drags on and President Trump is, again, talking of weeks, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. That could create a high human cost, and therefore that could lead to a reconsideration in terms of supporting this, notwithstanding the fact that, of course, there is a lot of anger towards the establishment. There is still a lot of unresolved issues from the January protests and that big and the events that occurred there.
Do you believe that most Iranians would like to see regime change within their own country? And do you think that there is any prospect that this military action might achieve that?
Well, many Iranians are clearly opposed to the Islamic Republic. They blame it for the sharp economic downturn, the political crisis, isolation from the international, from the West, but also a very severe environmental crisis that goes unreported, but the capital of Tehran is constantly on the verge of running out of water. All this is blamed on the establishment. So people would probably like to see a transition, and now probably there will be a lot of discussion over what trajectory the country has to follow, because regardless of the way it has happened, the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, who has ruled over Iran for 37 years, is, of course, leader no more. But whether this translates into supporting this type of transition away from the Islamic Republic as we knew it through sustained attacks and through pretty much a scheme which has been laid out by the Israelis. What's interesting is that while Prime Minister Netanyahu and the rest of the Israeli government are effectively saying that they're striking targets all across Tehran to pave the way for a popular uprising, we don't hear this message from the American side. President Trump or even the Secretary of War, Hegseth, does not quite say this. They say it's about neutralizing the Iranian missile industry and the missile systems and the nuclear program. So it is also unclear as to whether really the U.S. and Israel are on the same wavelength or singing from the same hymn sheet when it comes to the objective of this offensive. I think all of this will be noticed by people in Iran, and it will make them probably think about where all of this is leading.
The assassination of the Ayatollah, that the Supreme Leader being gone, that doesn't unravel the regime per se, though, does it? It's far more complex than that.
Well, he was in charge, and he was by far the most important figure of state when it comes to power and authority. But of course, this was an entrenched bureaucratic system with various military and political layers. Now, it wasn't just the assassination of Khamenei, of course. Again, President Trump has claimed this morning to CNN that 49 senior figures have been killed in that first wave of attacks on Saturday morning. We don't have the identity of more than half of them, so it's really difficult to also take stock of who actually is still alive and is in a position of being able to run things. There is a transition in place, but a transition obviously will be obstructed by the conflict, because ultimately the new supreme leader would have to be chosen through a body called the Assembly of Experts. It's formed by 88 people. They would need to have some form of a conclave. Obviously, that's not really possible under the present circumstances.
Okay. The Iranian move to target the Gulf states, they have obviously fired missiles at them. That seems strategically a strange move from this position here in Europe.
It is, yes. But this is what they have messaged for a long period of time. If you look at the statements of politicians close to Khamenei, the press close to Khamenei, they had always warned that in the case of an attack at the very senior figures of state, including Khamenei himself, the strategy would be to seek revenge on American bases across the region, try to close the Strait of Hormuz on the Persian Gulf. So they are sticking to script here. It should not really come as a surprise that they're doing this. This is also driven by the fact that they think that this is the strategy which could persuade Trump to bring this conflict to an end quickly, also on the basis of his very close ties with these Persian Gulf states. So the strategy is to basically persuade them to go to Trump and tell him to stop this conflict. Whether this is successful or not, really, this could go two ways. Either this could be an outcome in the following days if the Iranian attacks continue and keep hitting residential areas or hotels in these Persian Gulf capitals. Or, of course, it could have the other effect of hardening them and making them join in some way in this offensive. It's a bit too early to tell.
There has been some noise from Qatar that they are considering doing exactly that, that they are reacting to the Iranian missiles and saying that they are considering their position in terms of retaliation. Are you looking, do you think, or are we looking at a full-scale regional war erupting where potentially Arab states are at war with other Arab states?
I don't think that Arab states will be at war with other Arab states, because, of course, the one state ally that Iran had was Syria. And, of course, until the rule of Assad, but that ended, of course, in December of 2024. It had good relations with a very few of these Arab states that just patched up relations with Saudi Arabia. It had good relations with Qatar. Of course, Qatar was a key mediator that brought the June 2025 conflict to an end. Oman was doing the mediation between Iran and the United States, but those relations probably soured as a consequence of these constant attacks on Doha, Manama, all these Persian Gulf capitals, which, of course, are places of wealth, are key transport hubs with their airports and their airlines. They're not accustomed to this sort of situation, and they don't seem to be fully prepared for it either, as we saw from all these people stranded there. So clearly this will have the effect of also making them realize that such a thing was around the corner, even, of course, if they weren't actually the cause of it. None of these countries attacked Iran in the first place. This was an Israeli and American initiative. So clearly what this conflict is doing is that it's setting aside some assumptions and some norms and some principles which governed relations between Iran and the Arab world, not just between Iran, Israel and the United States.
Look, thank you very much for joining us on all of that. That is Dr. Siavush Ranjabardiemi, Senior Lecturer in Modern Middle Eastern History at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. And for more on this same topic, I'm joined by Kevin McPartland, CEO of Fuels for Ireland. Good evening to you, Kevin. Obviously, the Gulf states are big suppliers globally of oil. How is this going to impact us? I think I know the answer, perhaps, but also how soon?
Good afternoon, Ciara. The impact is, I suppose there's two things we need to consider about. One is availability and the second is price. So in terms of availability, we don't just source our product from the Middle East. Clearly, it's one of the major global regions which supplies fuel, but it's not the only one. So we're perfectly comfortable that we can maintain supply. We source fuel through established global supply chains. This isn't just a local supply issue. So we're pretty comfortable on supply. Price volatility has been already observed. We have looked today at wholesale prices for refined petrol and diesel have gone up a few cent per litre. And that will be felt on forecourts. Well, it's already being felt on forecourts, and it will continue to be felt in forecourts over the next couple of days. But it's important to say that we don't see any indications as of yet for severe or very long-term disruption to pricing.
You believe supply is secure, but that pricing, I presume, will go up. Someone has texted in and said, the oil supply from there will come to a standstill and Europe will be forced to deal with Russia again for their oil. Disaster. Is there any truth in that?
I don't think so. Well, first of all, we won't be dealing with Russia for fuel. It would be a breach of sanctions. And so that's definitely not going to happen. I don't believe that there is such a dependence on Middle Eastern oil coming into Ireland that we would have any particular panic reaction like that. We take fuel. Actually, a very small proportion of fuel that comes into Ireland comes from the Middle East. But we have to recognize this is a globally fungible market or a market of globally fungible products. So it does have an impact, but I don't see there being any risk to security of supply in Ireland at all.
Okay. Security, one thing, prices, the other. We obviously saw in the wake of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, prices hike quite significantly, both in our home heating oils and indeed at the petrol pumps. Are we looking at that?
Well, there's a real difference here in that, you know, the day before, or certainly a couple of weeks before the invasion of Ukraine, nobody was expecting it to happen, or at least not happen imminently. So that kind of came as quite a shock to the market. It was more sudden. There has been a build-up to this piece, and a certain amount of risk has already been priced into the market in relation to the Middle East. The big thing that we need to be aware of is the Strait of Hormuz. That's the pressure point. Because if the shipping continues to flow, then markets will calm. So we have to keep an eye on that. But it's not about the kind of sudden shock to the market that the invasion of Ukraine was.
OK, you sound vaguely reassuring, Kevin, and I thank you for that. That is Kevin McPartland, their CEO of Fuels for Ireland. One texter said, in Roscommon here, you can see some amount of military planes passing in the sky. It's so noticeable. Needless to say, they're not Irish. That's very interesting, Shane.
It is interesting. Another listener says, why is it the US and Israel attacking Iran as the regime is bad? So this illegal attack on Iran is good. Two things can be true at once. The regime can be bad, and the completely illegal attacks by Israel and the US are bad too, says this listener.
Yeah, do keep your texts coming in to the show on that.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.